Spacey is a global co-working and conference community. We've had our fingers on the pulse of co-working since 2012, and we've connected thousands of operators, both in person and online. On the Juicy Podcast, we talk with the people making it happen day in and day out. Let's get to it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I have one of our huge keynote juicy speakers this year, Anna Squires-Levine, who is the Chief Commercial Officer from Industrious with us today. And Anna, I would love to know how you are as a human being today.
Mixed, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, on the work front, it's the second to last day of Q1. It's like the last business day of Q1, which is always exciting. Lots of sales coming in, a lot of energy. And on the personal side, I'm just in it. I have two little kids. We are tired all the time. There's a lot of life happening. And I know I'm not alone in that, but kind of all I'm doing right now is working and parenting.
I am always impressed with people that have jobs and raise humans, because I purposely did not have any humans because I knew I couldn't be an entrepreneur and raise humans. I made a choice. I was like, I can have like a corporate job and I can like get a nanny and have a kid, or I can be an entrepreneur, get a dog and travel the world. So I picked get a dog, be an entrepreneur and travel the world.
Where are you right now?
I am in Austin, Texas. I just have a wonderful filter on my computer because I aspire to be wherever this is. Y'all, it looks like I'm working in Iceland, but I am not. I am in beautiful Austin, Texas. Okay, so Anna, oh my God, I went and read your LinkedIn, which I wish I'd done sooner. Okay, guys, are you ready for this? Okay, this is what I want to know. How do you go from a chemistry degree at Brown to an influenza researcher at Penn to McKinsey, but focused on South Africa, to running a nonprofit that helps move the needle on mother-to-child HIV transmission, to founding a startup company, to recruit amazing humans into politics, and then you're at Industrious? Walk me through this.
I am an opportunistic person. I don't have a life plan. Ever since I was little, I never had like a, here's what I'm going to be when I grow up and let me walk that linear path till I get there. It's always been kind of, what am I curious about in the moment? Who are the people I want to work with in the moment? And, you know, a lot of people ask me like, how did you jump from this thing to that thing? And it really has just been, what do I need in this phase of life? I studied chemistry because I thought it was really cool and I was good at it. And I think on some level, like no one likes organic chemistry. So the fact that I kind of liked it and was kind of good at it felt exciting. I did a lot of research on the flu virus, trying to understand a certain thing about the virus so we could develop drugs to treat it. And that felt cool, you know?
So cool.
Find antiviral medications. Of course, now there are many of them, like for COVID and everything else, but there weren't 20 years ago. And I really thought I was going to go get an MD-PhD, so much so that I took the MCATs. And the test was okay, but I discovered that I hated memorizing things and wasn't all that good at it either. And so after college, instead of taking that leap and going into a 15-year MD-PhD program, I wound up at McKinsey, big management consulting firm, which was not a place I knew anything about. I didn't go to a school that had a big business focus. McKinsey wasn't really recruiting on campus. But I started meeting folks there and I was like, oh, these people seem super smart. This feels like a way to get business school type skills without going to business school in this moment. And it was. And I lived in the U.S. for a couple of years and did big mergers and acquisitions work. And that was really business boot camp. What's a P&L? How do you model it? How do businesses, you know, come alive, die, merge, unmerge? And then I moved to South Africa with McKinsey because I was seeking a little bit of adventure. My kind of healthcare, I don't know, interests came back to life, even though I hadn't pursued medical school. And when I was in South Africa, we were doing projects in public health for Southern African governments. This was right kind of at the tail end of the first wave of HIV. And a lot of governments and public healthcare systems down there were trying to figure out, how do we respond? And that's ultimately what led me then to start Born Free, in which we were trying to prove that great leaders can get better healthcare results than bad leaders. And I'm happy to share more about it. But long story short, I wound up doing that for a number of years, building that across multiple countries and having the privilege of living over there, and eventually moved back here to New York because my now husband was here. And, you know, if Born Free was a successful startup experience, Run for America was totally not. And, you know, I still very much believe very much in the power of great leaders in the public sector, mm-hmm. but certainly we underestimated what it would be like to penetrate the political parties, you know, to pursue this idealistic vision. And it all kind of imploded, at which point I had no idea what I wanted to do and felt kind of identityless and like I had moved back to New York for this thing I cared about and then it didn't work. So I took a bunch of months off, which I was fortunate to be able to do, and just started talking to tons of people. And it was hard. You know, it felt I would be at a party or at a dinner and someone would be like, oh, what do you do? Which is the question everyone asks each other in New York.
Right.
And I didn't have an answer. And that was strange. But eventually I reconnected with Jamie, who's Industrious, the CEO, through friends of friends, because we had mutual past in Africa. He used to run an organization in Rwanda. And I didn't know anything about real estate. I didn't know anything about hospitality or operations. Honestly, I didn't even think I cared. I mean, I had been coming from this like straight down the fairway social justice work. But the more time I spent with Jamie and Justin, our other co-founder, and the team of 10 or 11 people who were around at that time, the more I just felt like, these are my people. They're kind, they're smart, they're super low ego, they're very goofy. And although I didn't know a lot about the substance of the work, the qualities of the people just drew me in. It was so different than what I experienced in the nonprofit world. And it was a 4-block commute from my apartment, which was far better than flying to Nigeria every 3 weeks. And I was just like, you know what? Let's do this. And that was almost 8 years ago in the ride of a lifetime.
Definitely. Definitely. And yeah, it's funny because I actually had y'all in my questions. I was like, let's talk about how Jamie Hodari is such a lovely human being. Like, I had the pleasure of spending some time with him last fall at a dinner. And like, I knew Jamie was a super nice guy. And he's always been super awesome to Juicy and very supportive. But I did not know like how kind and sweet he is. And I always say that I think co-working attracts really good people because at their core, they're wanting to take care of other humans because that's what you're really doing, right? You're giving them a place to spend the vast majority of their day that's better than their home or better than their office or better than the coffee shop. And so I just know it attracts good people because I've been in this industry for so long. But Jamie is a special kind of kind.
I'm sure he'd love to hear that. Would also be a little embarrassed. Yeah, probably. I mean, I agree.
Sorry, Jamie.
I think for me, for us, for Industrious, it really actually comes back to Jamie and Justin's relationship. They're our two co-founders. They are best friends. They grew up in suburban Detroit in houses that were right next door to each other. They've literally known each other since they were 1 or 2 years old. And I think their spirit of almost family, of being super open with each other, of transparency and honesty and real silliness.
Yep.
You know, they started Industrious. And I think a lot of those qualities are what we have all built on. And I say that because I think it takes two to tango, and it's very rare for two co-founders to
definitely
be together 10 years in. But I give them 100% of the credit for the direction they set the Industrious ship in. And they really complement each other. So yes, Jamie is amazing and he's the reason I'm here, but I really value both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Their relationship is really, really cool. So when I was talking to Jamie about coming to Juicy, which he actually volunteered for, which I was also super grateful for, he then like realized that it was really close to when his second child was going to be born. And he was like, you know, but we're doing this really incredible data and Anna knows all about this data we're doing. And so he's like, talk to Anna. And I was like, great. So you're coming to Juicy, which we're super excited about. And you guys have been doing a lot of research to inform the direction of Industrious. So without giving away the super secret, amazing stuff you're going to share on stage at Juicy, can you give us a little primer on what you're going to be talking about?
Sure. So I'm an analytical thinker. I obviously spent a bunch of my academic career, chemistry, biophysics, math. Like I love that stuff. And I think every business aspires to use data to make decisions, you know, repeating the most vanilla of business cliches ever, using data to make decisions. And I think most good businesses do in many different kinds of ways. However, I think for Industrious, now with the scale we have, 200 co-working locations, 100 tenant amenity locations where we run whole buildings across 10 countries, in the last year and a half, we've really cracked into a whole new level of that and have kind of moved from, okay, here's what our applications and our tours look like, therefore, here's what revenue is going to look like, to having enough information at scale to be able to say things like, hey, maybe we should never build interior offices again. And here's what would have to be true about how we monetize our spaces to make that possible. Hey, like, here's exactly the relationship between the cost to build that extra glass wall and the value of yet another small office that everyone wants. What's that trade-off there? What are the kinds of events that actually get people excited to come into the office versus not? And how many touch points does it take to repeat coming in enough for it to be a habit that sustains itself versus just a one-time pop? What is the relationship between how often you come to the office and whether you stay an industrious member for the long run? So I think my reflection is that it's really easy as a business to say like, oh yeah, we use our data. It's quite hard to use your data in meaningful ways that don't just describe what you're seeing, but that actually surprise you enough to make decisions to move the business forward in ways you wouldn't have otherwise. And I think, and I'm really excited about it. I mean, I think it's fun to bring science to this business. I think that there's a lot of assumptions about how co-working businesses work that don't have to be true. And now that we're out of COVID and the business has been doing great now for a couple of years, we have the time and the space to really rethink all of these fundamental assumptions we've made over the years and question them.
Love it. Love it. I'm actually, I found out when I went back to school to get my graduate certificate in foresight, I figured out that I love data. And I'm always like trying to find really good data for the co-working industry. And the problem is because we're still so quote unquote new, which is about, I don't know, somewhere between 13 and 15 years old, because there is no, you know, co-star of co-working, we don't have a really accurate count of how many co-working spaces there are in the world. And there's parts of the world where it's literally almost impossible to track. Like Japan, for instance, is a really hard place to track because they turn over their property so quickly. So one day a place is open and the next year it's closed, and it didn't mean it went out of business. It just went somewhere else and changed its name. So like we're missing a lot of numbers. And it's interesting because a lot of the data that we've had lately has been coming from the aggregator community, right? It's from Instant, it's from Liquid Space, it's from FlexDay, it's from, you know, DeskPass, and it's their data, and they see a very different part of the business. So this is super exciting because you guys have such incredible scale. I'm really excited and thankful that you guys are willing to share some of that with us, because that's the kind of thing that we want to give people at Juicy. Is we want people to come to Juicy to help next level their operations and sales, to work on their strategy, and to future-proof their business. And that's the kind of information and insight that really helps people be like, wow, I should be thinking about this. Wow, what should I be tracking? And what should I love the thing about the glass wall, right? Or the interior offices. What are the things that are just tweaks that could make a huge difference? Because we're all so busy being in the business that it's really hard to work on the business.
It's true. And I think especially in a product that involves such a large physical component, you know, what you build, it's not there are tech components of our businesses, but we are all not SaaS businesses. I mean, we can't release a new feature and then boom, it's out to everyone all the next day. If you figure out that you've built something wrong or your underwriting was off from how it's actually performing in real life, the fix, it's fixable, but you got to either put time or money or whatever into it. And I think managing that kind of portfolio, I find it very exciting. I also find it tiring. But part of the reason we're trying to use our information to optimize for the future is because now we do have hundreds of locations and we can say, oh, this works and this doesn't. And here's how it's related to where you are and the kind of people are there and what problems they're trying to solve. And so we're both trying to optimize the portfolio we have and make good decisions about the future.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Well, I'm super excited to hear more about it. And, you know, we'll do that in Salt Lake City.
Juicy is headed to Salt Lake City. Join us in Utah on April 9th through 11th for Juicy North America. We'll have a three-day program where the mountains meet the city and co-working is just around the corner. We invite you to join our community for a real-time co-working and hospitality experience, Juicy style. In addition to the conference, we'll have a mix of work and play activations for you and your team to take advantage of. Whether you're up for outdoor thrills, exploring the art scene, or digging into local cuisine, we've got you covered. We chose Salt Lake because it's such a cool place with warm vibe, and we're ready to welcome you. For more information about Juicy North America, head to na.gcuc.co. Speakers and more to come. See you soon.
So curious, and how have you seen hybrid work affecting sales at Industrious?
I find, I guess there's a few ways, a few things that come to mind with that question. I don't think hybrid work is new. And I find it's kind of a general term that means a lot of things to a lot of people, and it's difficult to. But in more concrete terms, what we observed from our members is that before the pandemic, the average member came in about the same as they're coming in today, give or take. But it was never, everyone was in 5 days a week to begin with. Now, I understand, of course, that there are a lot of businesses, particularly larger enterprise companies, where that was the norm. And in some cases, that is the norm now. But I think of people who were working at an Industrious, it was never 5 days a week. So I think it was already hybrid. We just didn't have the language and it wasn't quite as prevalent. And we hadn't gone through this big societal upheaval to think about it in that way. That being said, really, since like the day the vaccines came out in the early part of 2021, our business has been off to the races. And it just hasn't slowed down. And I don't mean to say that with a lot of arrogance, but it's been a great couple of years for us. And I think that's for all the same reasons I'm sure so many other operators are experiencing. For an individual, even for people who like working at home, there's just you can't actually sit on your couch every day of your life for the next 20 years. I think humans need other humans and they just need other people. And on the other end of the spectrum, I mean, most large Fortune 500 companies are trying to figure out how to be more efficient with their spend and their space and at the same time create an amazing experience for their people. And I mean, I don't know what I'm having for breakfast tomorrow, let alone being able to think about commit to signing a 15-year lease for 50 people in Atlanta. You know, it's like, I think it's very natural for large companies just to say, outside of my headquarters, I don't need to own this space or lease this space. Mm-hmm. Let me look to all of these different co-working operators. So for us, it's been amazing.
I love it. I love it.
Point of view. I think what I'm thinking about right now is what's next? Like, if it's true that most people want to work in an office, you know, a couple of days a week, which I think it is, then is the thing that we're selling what they want? You know, do most people actually want their own dedicated private office 24/7 or not? I think some people do and some people don't. But I'm thinking a lot about if it's not that, then what is it? How could you buy from Industrious in a way that doesn't require you to commit to a 24/7 thing if that's not what you want?
Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's funny. I never thought about it that way, that like, it's kind of always, co-working's kind of always had hybrid because it's very rare for somebody to come in 5 days a week into a co-working space. And it kind of always has been. I do think, you know, the thing that happened post-COVID was people had choice. And now that choice is a thing, we're not going back. And I freaking love that about Americans. We're like, no, this is it. We're not doing it this way anymore. And, you know, it's like, I feel like the first iteration of that was when people were like, I'm not going to your soulless office and sitting in this cubicle anymore. And so I think that the industry is just going to see a massive uptick because, you know, as the majority of leases come to be renewed this year, very few companies are going to be like, yeah, give me that 200,000 square feet for another 15 years. They're just not going to do that. And so a lot of leases and buildings are going to have a crisis on their hands because they don't need that space anymore. And here's the deal. We're a capitalist culture. Scott Galloway said this today on the Pivot podcast. He's like, the deal is we are a capitalist culture and this saves company monies. So they're going to do it, period. End of story. Whether it's good for them or not. And he makes a lot of points around like people need, like especially young people need to be around mentors. But then the mentors have got two kids at home, hair on fire, trying to get it all done. And they want to work from home so that they can be more present and get more things done or whatever. So I do think, you know, we've got a lot to work out. I don't think these companies, and I was recently incredibly disappointed in Michael Dell because I used to work for Dell, and them coming back and saying you have to be in the office for 5 days a week. And I bet you he quietly walks that back in about 3 months because they are going to lose so much great talent because we simply won't do that anymore. And I love that. I love that about Americans. And America will be the most contentious. You know, in different parts of the world, if your boss says come back to work, you simply go back to work and you do not talk back. But Americans talk back. And we're not doing it
in our business. I mean, for the most part, in APAC, I mean, they of course experienced the pandemic, but it hardly, you know, like everyone is in the office all the time there. And that's made the business hugely resilient.
Yeah, definitely. But over time, it'll change because it'll wave around the world just like things do. But, you know, I do think this is one thing I have to give Industrious credit for, is I think part of the reason you guys have done so well in the past couple of years is something WeWork could never figure out, which was how to have a consistent experience. So if you go to, I have found when I drop in on an Industrious, I have a very good experience just dropping in, whether it's in Chicago or New York or Austin. And that is really hard to do. That is really hard to do. And it's really hard to scale a community, but you guys have done it. So bravo, you deserve to reap all the rewards from that because a lot of other people have not figured that out.
Thank you. I mean, we work really hard at it. Just, I'm looking at my laptop here because I have a little sticker next to my trackpad that says universal service steps. And they're the five service behaviors that we're all living and breathing all the time. It's obviously not the whole answer, but it's right in front of me. So I'm looking at it. We put a ton of intention about how to scale experience. We don't always get it right, but I agree. I mean, there are a lot of things we do better today than when we had 10 locations on the experience front. And that's partly because of the sophistication of our team and our leaders. That's partly because at scale, if you prioritize it, you can actually do some pretty cool things on the experience front that we never would have been able to do when we were much smaller. But thank you. It means a lot to me. And it's certainly the center of our strategy. And I'm glad that you experience that when you come in.
Yeah, no, it's really hard to do. And so kudos, you guys deserve it. So interestingly, you know, and I talked about this a little bit, but I'd love to hear your thoughts as you're thinking about kind of what's next. You know, one of the things I've been thinking and talking about a lot is that, you know, that the real estate is going to have a huge correction. I think it's going to kind of hit mainly this fall. And by correction, I mean, people aren't going to renew all these leases. And then, you know, Class A plus plus will do really well, and kind of creative office will probably do okay, but kind of B and C class in the middle isn't going to do so well. So does that, you know, I hate to, you know, make light of it. I don't mean to, because it's a huge, you know, economic impact and potentially bad thing for our economy. But on the other hand, I think it's a real big upswing for co-working. I think when that hits, you guys are going to have more opportunities than ever. I think landlords are going to be coming to you and literally begging you to go to their building. Are you guys already starting to see a little bit of that?
We're growing very quickly, you know, as we have been really for every year except 2020 in the middle of the pandemic. And I think for us, you know, we partner with our landlords. Every deal structure is some form of an asset light, liability light deal. So the landlord's paying for the vast majority of our CapEx to build the space, and then we're sharing either the revenue or the profit. I think what that means is that landlords who are excited to work with us either are landlords that have a lot of money in the bank and are like, I want to use my dry powder here to get ahead, to make sure that I can build a moat for the future. And therefore, they're not in such dire straits. It's not inexpensive to build an Industrious. Or they're landlords who may be in a slightly worse position, but are able to finance that. So we do have a ton of demand from landlords. However, because it's basically a business partnership, like we are all putting in money. I think we do find that landlords who are a little bit more strapped, even if they would want to work with us, don't always have the resources to. That being said, I've obviously, like you, been in and read everything there is to read about the stratification of buildings and quote unquote flight to quality. In our own portfolio, our performance does not shake out that way. Like, we do not see that the prettiest glass and steel buildings always do amazing and the very functional but slightly less aesthetically pleasing office park always does terribly. Like, that's not what we see. We see performance is very related to, is my commute low to work? Like, is the office located in a place where people can happily get there easily? You know, certain things related to demographics. And so as much as I know the macro trends, like I see the data too, and I believe that the best assets are getting the best game right now, I see a glimmer of hope for, I think, some of these buildings that are being written off, because a lot of them are very well positioned. And they may not have the shiniest exterior or the new lobby, but they might be a 5-minute bike ride away from where lots of people live, or they might, you know, and I think thinking about the value of a building to its tenants as customers can help some of these landlords reposition themselves in ways that can at least get them through this weird readjustment period until interest rates get more normal and things start trading again.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like that a lot. And that's very true, because one thing that I definitely notice it with myself is I have no tolerance for a commute anymore. I just don't. If I got stuck in some traffic this week going to my co-working space, and I was so annoyed because I was so wildly inefficient.
Yeah. You're like, why am I leaving if I'm going to spend half an hour?
Right. Right. I can't spend an hour in traffic. It literally makes me crazy because I didn't have to for so long. So yeah, that's a very, very good point there. Okay. So I don't know where the time went. You're just so easy to talk to, Anna. And thank you again for joining us. But I have one final question for you. And it's a little bit of a roulette, I guess. You can choose to either answer, what is a question I should have asked you, but I didn't. And then, of course, then you get to answer that question. Or you can tell us, if you could time travel back to wherever Anna Squires was when she was 12 years old, and you can tell her one thing about the future, what would you tell her?
I think that I spent a lot of my kind of early 20s into early 30s putting a lot of pressure on myself to achieve in various ways. I've psychoanalyzed it a lot. I'm sure it comes from my childhood in one way or another, but it's taken a lot of work just to realize life is short. It's kind of about friends and family and having impact and laughing and learning.
Yep.
And I wish, if I had been able to digest that when I was 12, I think I would have had a much happier, more joyful, less stressful, you know, high school, college, and post-college period.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just part of growing up, but that's what I wish I knew.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, it's like, if most of the time the pressure is from ourselves, it's not from anybody else. It's all your own pressure. I was recently, I'm sure anyone could relate to this because you know what a Herculean effort it is to try to pull off Juicy. And, you know, we basically do it with two people and a couple interns, which is literally crazy. But I was just really worrying. And somebody reminded me that worry never accomplished anything. And that most of the time, the stuff you're worrying about doesn't happen or doesn't matter. And I was like, I'm just wasting my time. Just like I might as well be sitting in a car, you know, in a traffic jam, because that worry didn't accomplish anything. So yeah, I totally, totally get that. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And thank you so much for joining us. And I can't wait to finally meet you in person.
Likewise.
Next month. And you guys, get your tickets to Juicy. You still have a few days left.
Thank you for tuning into the Juicy Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and follow us for more Juicy content. You can stay connected with us on social media by following us at Juicy Global. We're looking forward to having you join us next time for more insightful discussions. Until then, keep exploring the co-working world with the Juicy Podcast. Ciao.